to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 12, Text 3, 4, and 5. The chapter is titled Creation of the Kumaras and Others, or What Lord Brahma Does. This sarga, the sub-creation. Again, this is one of the 10 principal topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we heard yesterday, the first thing that Brahma did in his activity of creation was creating all these like dark, ugly things. Self-deception, so nescient engagements of different types. Self-deception, sense of death, anger after frustration, sense of false ownership, illusory bodily conception, forgetfulness of one's real identity, coverings. And we discussed all of that. So the next verse describes how Brahma felt about what he just did. He didn't feel good about it. So he did something as a counteraction. Text 3. Seeing such a misleading creation as a sinful task, Brahma did not feel much pleasure in his activity. And therefore he purified himself by meditation on the personality of Godhead. Then he began another term of creation. Prabhupada doesn't identify so much this other term of creation, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does. The dviparadha, the two halves of Brahma's creation. And here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. It's something that is never mentioned anywhere by Srila Prabhupada, but being a little familiar with how Vishwanath does things, when he says things, he immediately supports them with scriptural references, the basis, which is the basis of his saying these things. In this case, he doesn't. But why there's dviparadha, he writes that at the end of the first half of Brahma's day, he, Brahma, I'll read it, at the end of the first half of Brahma's life, Brahma and others who lived for the whole of Brahma's life entered into the Supreme Lord. You ever heard that one before? I've never heard that one before. Doesn't give an explanation, it just says that's what happens. And then, just as Brahma appears from a lotus, on the first day of the second half of his life, as he did in the Padma Kalpa, the previous day, Brahma made the Kumaras and others appear at this time, although they actually lived for Brahma's 100 years. So there are, as Brahma lives for 100 years, there are personalities who live for the same duration. The Kumaras being an example. And I, you know, don't ask me, can you explain something more about this? Because the answer is, I can't. But, so they appear, the Kumaras appear, they last for the same duration of life as Lord Brahma, 100 years. And in the first Paradha they appear, and then in the second Paradha they appear. That's the description that we're hearing here. And the verse is saying, then he began another term of creation. And then the Kumaras appear, that's the next verse. Four of them, and they each representing something that's of the nature of vidya that counteracts avidya. Let me read what Prabhupada writes in his purport here. Purport for text 3. Although he created the different influences of nescience, Lord Brahma was not satisfied in performing such a thankless task. In fact, he considered it sinful. But he had to do so because most of the conditioned souls wanted to be so. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, what's 15:15? Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishta matak smithir gyanam apohanamcha. Situated in the heart of all living beings, from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So, in 15:15, Krishna says that he is present to everyone's heart and is helping everyone to either remember or forget. The question may be raised. People ask it all the time. Why the Lord, who is all merciful, helps one to remember and another to forget? Why doesn't even let anyone forget? You can do it, you know, you can't forget. Too bad, you want to forget. You can't. He doesn't do that. Actually, his mercy is not exhibited in partiality towards one and enmity towards another. The living entity as part and parcel of the Lord is partially independent, because he partially possesses all the qualities of the Lord. Anyone who has some independence may sometimes misuse it due to ignorance. When the living entity prefers to misuse his independence and glide down toward nescience, the all-merciful Lord, remember the question somebody was asking, why doesn't he put on the brakes? This was your question. The all-merciful Lord, first of all, tries to protect him from the trap. But when the living entity persists in gliding down to hell, the Lord helps him to forget his real position. The Lord helps the falling living entity glide down to the lowest point. And what's the reason? Just to give him the chance to see if he is happy by misusing his independence. And the answer is no. Just yesterday I received from Vijay, our global minister for book distribution, a little exchange that he had in Santa Monica with an 85-year-old man. Maybe some of you received that. The man's name was Paul, and he came up and approached the man, 85-year-old guy, just like walking along the streets in Santa Monica. And the man said, Krishna? Because, you know, he goes in his Western clothes. Krishna? Hare Krishna? And he said, yeah. And he said, I don't see you guys around anymore. And Vijay had a prepared answer. He said, we're around, you just have to look a little harder. We're around. He said, I've been thinking of getting this Bhagavad Gita. Let me take a look. And so he starts looking. And so one of his lines is, he shows them the picture of the changing bodies and says, you know, where do you think you are in this? It's like something you can try when you distribute books. And he said, wait, over here. And sentence, I forget what the other exchange was, but something like, you know, what's next? And he points to, like, you know, the guy that's dead. But then he says, no, but there's this one. The soul moves on to some other position. And then something that the man, you know, was acknowledging, life is miserable. So, connecting that to this, that's the message. We want, Krishna tries to advise us otherwise. We insist, we persist, alright. But it's not going to be nice. That's alright, I want. It's similar to the King Chitraketu, who was advised by Angira Muni. Just accept the Lord is not wishing you to have a son. No, I want to have a son. But it will cause, you know, harsh ashoka, it will cause you misery. Yeah, he said he may talk back a little bit. That's okay, I want a son. All right. Harsh ashoka. The lesson is, it doesn't fulfill the promise. And so then there's an expectation that's unfulfilled leads to frustration. And following frustration is anger. And it's, those are unwanted things in life, frustration and anger. We want happiness. Why is this, you know, why does God do this? Not, you know, the blame doesn't go to God, do this. It's like you insisted. And so there's a lesson that says there's not happiness, frustration and anger. But yeah, but when people are angry, they do mean things. Yeah, that's part of the lesson. You don't belong here. Almost all the conditioned souls who are rotting in the material world are misusing their independence, and therefore five kinds of nations are imposed upon them. As an obedient servitor of the Lord, Brahma creates all these as a matter of necessity, but he is not happy in doing so, because a devotee of the Lord naturally does not like to see anyone falling down from his real position. Then the last sentence of the purport, persons who do not care for the path of realization get full facilities from the Lord for executing their proclivities to the fullest extent, and Brahma helps in that procedure without fail. So one of the connections here is, does Brahma do or does Krishna do? And the answer is, Krishna does through the agency of his devotees. Like the verse from Sri Brahma Samhita, Shristi Stati Pralaya Sada Nashakyareka Chayeva Yashabhavanan Vibharti Durga. So persons who don't know the rest of it say, yeah, look, Durga, she's Shristi Stati Pralaya, she's the creator, maintainer, and the destroyer, so we worship her. Seeing the agent as the owner. The agent isn't the owner. So it's a picture of reality or truth. It has some, amongst the many questions and answers yesterday, there were some that came after the class. Grand Rapids, and this was one of them. You know, some people say, and some people say. So there's truth in what some people say. Scriptural truth. Dora God does these things, but she does those things through the agency of. And, you know, so does Durga create? Does Brahma create? Or does Krishna create? You've got, like, these different voices out there saying these different things. And they're not contradictory. If one understands the bigger picture, there may be some immediate, and then there's a remote. Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna is the cause of all of the causes. So what Durga does and what Brahma does, Krishna is the cause. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So if that forgetfulness is coming from Krishna, he can do so through an agency. At least as far as this section of the Bhagavatam is concerned, we should see that Brahma is the obedient servant of the personality of Godhead. And then there's another dimension. Brahma does some things he doesn't so much like doing. You ever have to do things that you don't so much like doing? I do some things I don't so much like doing. I don't know how I do them. I know why I do them. But I don't like create nations, but I do things I don't like doing. Not because it gives suffering and bondage and misery to living entities, at least as far as I know. But it's just like something that... So a devotee may do some things like that. So in his contemplation with that which he really didn't feel good about doing, and the reason not wanting to see living entities glide down to hell, so what's something that can help living entities from not having to glide down to hell? By that purification of his mind, meditating upon the personality of Godhead, the inspiration of manifesting the Lord's Gyan Shakti, the four Kumaras, Shaktivesh avatars, by that agency of the contemplation of Lord Brahma, through a Vaishnava's contemplation of the well-being of others, things can manifest. How Brahma does it and how we do it certainly is going to be on a different dimension, but that's the well-wishing of a Vaishnava creates auspiciousness in this world that counteracts or neutralizes the inauspiciousness. Even the living entities, I want to be covered. Or I want that which is impossible. I want to enjoy independently. So knowledge that can reduce that spirit. So that's the next verse, text 4. In the beginning, so there's the beginning of Brahma's life, and then there's the beginning of the second paradha, so either one. In the beginning, Brahma created four great sages named Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat Kumar. All of them were unwilling to adopt materialistic activities because they were highly elevated due to their semen's flowing upwards. Purport. Although Brahma created the principles of nescience as a matter of necessity for those living entities who were destined to ignorance by the sanction of the Lord, he was not satisfied in performing such a thankless task. Therefore, he created the four principles of knowledge. So four Kumaras, four principles of knowledge. And they are Sankhya, Yoga, Vairagya, and Tapas. So he expands. Sankhya, empirical philosophy for the analytical study of material conditions. Sankhya. Then yoga, or mysticism for liberation of the pure soul from material bondage. Sankhya, yoga, vairagya, the acceptance of complete detachment from material enjoyment in life to elevate oneself to the highest spiritual understanding. Vairagya. Sankhya, yoga, vairagya, and tapas. Various kinds of voluntary austerities performed for spiritual perfection. Four Kumaras, four principles of knowledge. Vidya, or jnana, knowledge, like in Ishopanishad, vidyam and avidya. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes that although these four are mentioned, they're powerless, useless, nothing without bhakti. So bhakti is present. It's a subset, or it's invested within each of the four kumaras. And on that basis, Prabhupada writes, they form their sampradaya, called the Kumara Sampradaya, later the Nimbarka Sampradaya, and they establish bhakti. So it's important when we think of the four Kumaras to think of them properly. They manifest as liberated souls. It's described in fixed in Brahma Gyan, transcendental knowledge. They're liberated, like Shukadeva Goswami, they're liberated from birth, but at least in the estimation of the Jai and Vijay, they weren't devotees. So Vishwanath helps us to understand in his commentary they bhakti was a subset, but it wasn't yet manifest, because it becomes manifest through the association of the process of devotional service by the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. So they were Brahman realized, and they became devotees by, they exhibited their devotion by when they came to the gates of Vaikuntha and they smelled the sandalwood and tulsi anointing the lotus feet of the Lord. That alone awakened their devotion. So they're extraordinary, the Kumaras. They receive transcendental knowledge and they transmit transcendental knowledge. But they're empowered forms of the Lord, manifesting His Gyan Shakti. So they're very interesting. in different places, in the tenth canto, for example, prayers by the personified Vedas. They're there, having discussions with the personified Vedas. Very, very elevated discussions. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, they're there in Tapaloka having discussions on very, very elevated subject matters. That they, whenever the Kumaras have discussions, it's like you have to really pay attention, because it's very detailed and subtle and profound. You can't just like cruise. You have to be very attentive. So Brahma created the four sages to entrust them with these four principles of spiritual advancement, and they inaugurated their own spiritual party or sampradaya, Kumara sampradaya, later Nimbarka sampradaya, for the advancement of bhakti. All these great sages became great devotees. For without devotional service to the personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve success in any activity of spiritual value. So Brahma manifested the four Kumaras to serve as an antidote to these principles of nascent activities, at least to give souls an opportunity for something other than just being covered. And then the next verse, text 5, he requested them, please assist me by creating good praja. And they said, no thanks, Dad. My dear sons, he said, now generate prajani. But due to their being attached to Vasudev, the phrase is Vasudeva Parayana. And those of you that know this phrase, Vasudeva Parayana or Narayana Parayana, it's like has a very special place in the Bhagavatam. It's like one of those refrain phrases that when you hear it, it should ring a bell. Once you become familiar with the Bhagavatam, it's very, very deep attachment to the personality and Godhead. It's used in relation to King Chitraketu. Narayana Paraksarge Nakrutas Chandavibhuti Svarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apito Yarta Darshanam, where the position of the Narayana Parayana is they're totally indifferent to heaven, hell, or liberation. Imagine if someone is told, go to hell, I'm indifferent. Go to heaven, I'm indifferent. Become liberated, I'm indifferent. It's not even like yes or no, it's just indifferent. Why? Narayana Parayana. They're completely attached to the service of the personality of Godhead. Here, there, some other place. Let me remain attached to the personality of Godhead. And said without the terminology Narayana Parayana or Vasudev Parayana in Lord Chaitanya Shikshastakam, you can do with me what you like. This, that, the other thing. One request, please give me your devotional service. So that's the position of the Kumaras. And because of that, the position of the Kumaras, Vasudeva Parayana, they aimed at liberation and therefore they expressed their unwillingness. And those of you that are householders, please don't feel offended. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The four sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, declined to become family men even at the request of their great father, Brahma. Those who are serious about gaining release from material bondage should not be entangled in the false relationship of family bondage. People may ask how the Kumaras could refuse the order of Brahma, who was their father and above all the creator of the universe. The reply is that one who is Vasudeva Parayana or seriously engaged in devotional service of the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, need not care for any other obligation. And he quotes Devarshi Puttaptra Nunam Pritrinam, etc. Nakinkaro, we're not obliged to be the servant of any other laudable principle if this one principle is accomplished. Sarvatmana yaksharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritya kartum. translation, anyone who has completely given up all worldly relationships and has taken absolute shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, who gives us salvation and who alone is fit to be taken shelter of, is no longer a debtor or servant to anyone, including demigods, forefathers, sages, other living entities, relatives, and members of human society, unquote. Thus, there was nothing wrong with the acts of the Kumaras when they refused their great father's request that they become family men. As a new devotee, the way that I heard this explained by Srila Prabhupada was, this is one request that a disciple can refuse of the spiritual master. Get married. Oh, and it's okay. Of course, it should be for the right reason, not for the wrong reason. In the case of the Kumaras, it's for the right reason. Bhishma Dev refused Parashuram to get married. Somewhat different reason. He had taken a vow, and I can't break a vow. And an instruction that's contrary to a religious principle, a disciple need not follow. He gives three reasons, and scripturally, where an instruction from a spiritual master need not be followed. That's one of them. In reading that, just one last thing. When reading this, there was something that occurred to me about, you know, how Brahma felt after creation. Brahma Vaivarta Purana, I think it is, one of the Puranas, that is the significance of Ekadasi Day, is described in a similar manner. After Brahma completed creation, he stepped back to look to see how did it come out, and he felt, oh, this is awful. This, like, got living entities really bound up and suffering. What to do? It's such a terrible situation that I've created. And then he became inspired that I'll create this auspicious day, Ekadashi, that it's so auspicious that if one properly observes it, he'll be freed from all of those entanglements of sin and sinful reaction. So he created Ekadasi Day as a very, very auspicious day. I remember when devotees didn't have the proper understanding of Ekadasi Day, we thought we had to fast because as a punishment. Because, you know, like, we did something bad or it's a bad day, so we fast because it's a bad day. Prabhupada said, no. It's an auspicious day. And because it's an auspicious day, we want to observe tapa. We want to reduce our involvement in material activity and increase our spiritual activity because it's such an auspicious day. So he created Ekadasi Day. And then Papa Purush came to complain. Hey, what have you done? You created me, now you've made it impossible for me to live. Because those who observe Ekadasi, I have no influence. I can't, and I don't have any existence. So Lord Brahma said, maybe it was Lord Vishnu said, very well, you can reside on Ekadasi Day in grains. And whoever takes grains on Ekadasi Day, they'll be eating sin. Oh, very good. So don't eat grains on Ekadasi Day. And observe Ekadasi in a very nice way. Because it's an impetus or an opportunity for spiritual progress. Not, you know, just another day. It's a very special day for spiritual progress. And Prabhupada writes in his Bhagavad Gita purport that for Vaishnavas that want to make advancement, this is one of the things they can do to make advancement. Observe something special on the appearance days of the Lord and the Kadasi days, because they're very special. If we observe a half-day fast on the appearance days of Lord Vishnu and great Vaishnava Acharyas, because it's auspicious day, so we want to reduce, and that's a theme, reduce the activities of the body and increase spiritual activities in general, and especially on these auspicious days, impetus for spiritual advancement. Any discussion on this?
Maharaj, I think it's only because I'm not very familiar with Bhagavatam. I'm wondering when the Kumaras gain their attachment so that they could say, no, we don't want to beget progeny. Because from the verse it sounded like they'd immediately been manifested and then they didn't want to. So I thought that they were in a liberated state but not an attached state to Vishnu or Krishna.
I don't understand your question. They were in a liberated state. They were not attracted to becoming involved in worldly affairs. And family life means getting involved in worldly affairs. So they declined. They were Brahman realized. They were liberated.
And with the parayana, is that the phrase?
Vasudeva Parayana.
Parayana.
They were so attached to Vasudeva. Vasudeva Parayana.
That liberated and attached.
I don't understand your question. Liberated and attached. Could you say a whole sentence? Does somebody else understand what he's asking?
I'm wondering, does liberated necessitate that attachment to this
year? There are different types of liberation. In Rishabhdev's teachings to his 100 sons, there one of the verses that he speaks to them is Mahatsevam Dvaram Ahor Vimuktes. And in this purport, Prabhupada writes, there are two kinds of Mahats, or transcendentalists, the impersonalist and the personalist. So at that stage, they were impersonalists. Now, it's a little contradictory. It does say Vasudeva Parayana, if that's what your confusion is. There's an impersonal conception of Vasudeva also, and there's a personal conception of Vasudeva. Is that where your confusion lies?
That's my confusion, is that it seemed, again, that they hadn't become devotees yet. They hadn't become attached personally to Vasudeva, to Krishna.
Now I understand your question. So, there's an impersonal conception of Vasudeva. Just like, Bahunam Jamanam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvamiti. So, the impersonalists, when they read that verse, yes, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. All there is Brahman. And, you know, as far as surrendering, yes, give up all worldliness and just surrender to Brahman. Merge with Brahman. That's how they read it. So, later, but at the same time, especially based upon the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, bhakti was a subset, or one can say dormant. So latent within them was this capacity, which was awakened or manifested when they went to the gates of Vaikuntha. And they were barred because, oh, you're not devotees. You can't enter unless you're a devotee, although they had become devotees just by that contact. So it's one of these subtle things. You can read it this way, you can read it that way. And sometimes Prabhupada does. I mean, in a series of verses, he'll speak on this side and then he'll speak on that side. He'll speak about the attachment of Arjuna to the platform of the body, and then another moment he'll praise Arjuna for this, to see this wonderful quality of a Vaishnava. He's detached from any sense of being, proprietorship and position. He's ready to be very renounced and detached. So, in a similar way, Vasudeva Parayana has, you can read it this way or explain it this way, look at it this way or look at it that way. They're liberated on the detached from material attraction stage of life. Something else? Yes.
On one side we see Lord Brahma, he was not happy when he created all these nascent engagements. On the other side, like when Kumaras refused to get married and to progeny, he was angry. He exhibited anger. So like, how do we understand this?
What's the problem in understanding it?
I'm thinking like the Kumaras wanted to pursue their path to the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead of getting married and being progeny. So, I'm thinking like he should have been happy because they would go back to Krishna.
Well, one can go back to Krishna if you're married too. So one can be a detached householder or an attached householder. And they prefer, I'd rather not be a householder. It's like in the fifth canto, beginning of the fifth canto, the line from Swayambhuva Manu through Uttanapada and so forth going down, the line had been broken. And Swayambhuva Manu is the Manu, he has to have a king. So he went to Uttanapada's brother, Priyavrata, said, "You become king." And like the Kumaras, no. He didn't have that inclination even. He was the elder brother and said, "Let my younger brother become king. I'll go into the forest and practice bhakti in detachment." So he had done that for a long time. So many generations of kings had passed. He's like fixed. Become the king. No. He didn't want to say no. Kumara said no. He didn't want to say no, but he didn't want to say yes. Because becoming king meant queen and money. And through contact with queen and money, mind can become restless or become entangled. So it finally got resolved where Brahma came. Narada came and Brahma came. Swayambhuva Manu, they ganged up on him. And Priyavrata thought, great, Narada's come. He'll say, renounce. He's known to encourage people to renounce. But he didn't say that. Brahma came and said, be become the king, and although you will become, as happens, entangled or attached to material contact, you'll be released in the end, which is what happened. He became attached and he became released. He did that as a service. The Kumaras were not inclined.
Well, my question is regarding a statement we heard from Srila Prabhupada that without devotional service, one cannot achieve success in any activity of spiritual value. And the question is, like, I'm little, need a little clarification on the statement we heard on the first day about, like, the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is coming out of the material conception of life.
Yes.
And it seems to me like the yogis or the people who may not be doing devotional service, but they do come out of the bodily conception and they do have a realization that they are beyond the body.
Well, let's say there are those that don't, but let's say there are those that do. But it's incomplete without shelter. Prabhupada's example, you know, going back to the 60s, where he would speak about rocket ships that are do space exploration, and with a great effort they can overcome the gravity of the Earth and leave the Earth's atmosphere, and they're zooming around in space, zoom, 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 zoom. But without taking shelter somewhere, they must come back. So, detached, but no shelter. Ruya Krishna Param Padam Tada Patanjado Yushmat Anangra. So they're having not taken shelter, that dimension is a little bit of like the Vasudeva Prayana as the impersonal sees, Vasudeva Prayana as the devotee sees. Having not taken shelter, it's incomplete. It's something. Going back to this Mahat Sevam Dwaram example, the transcendentalists, they're transcendentalists. Such persons may be leave behind, but that's the beginning. Then, where's the shelter? If you're not this body, your spirit soul, what do spirit souls do in that liberated state? Incomplete without serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And if you have from the outset that understanding, serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, I may still be carrying a bodily conception, but the potency is there to release one from the bodily conception, if I so desire, if I actually hear the message.
Like in the absolute sense, there is no spiritual value. So although they are acquiring this quality of
detachment from the bodily conception.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's negation. Commonly, it's not Brahman realization. Commonly, it's definition by negation, or the flip side of the same coin: attachment, repulsion, or aversion. Neti neti. It's not what is Brahman. Even what is Brahman is not clear. It's just saying what is Brahman is not this. So it's vimuktimaninas, imagining themselves to be liberated by that process of negation. But real liberation is identification with Brahman. But what is Brahman? The understanding is incomplete without Brahmanohi Pratishtaham.
Maharaj, this is question regarding yesterday's lecture about value education.
it was like when I grew up, we were given more of an academic value, more than value education. It's like we stress more on academic. So I am just wondering, which I don't have, how can I transfer those values or anything to my son?
Yeah, you have from Prabhupada's teachings. That's where you get it. So imbibe it and transmit it. That's what you do. Now, there are values, say on a simpler platitude of morality. That is a value. Don't steal, don't lie, don't cheat, you know, tell the truth, respect others' property, and so forth. Those are moralities. Those are also values. But values that go to the spiritual plane, the value of worshiping Krishna. You have that and you're passing that on. His son likes it. It's evident he likes it. He couldn't do what he's doing if he didn't like it. You get bored, stiff, but he likes it. So it's a value that you're passing on. You know, according to capacity. And as your capacity increases, then you can pass it on better. So increase your capacity. But you're doing, and he's receiving. Don't lament. You're doing well. Keep going. Yes?
You mentioned, with respect to Vasudeva Palani.
Vasudeva Parayana, you said, do not deserve hell, heaven or liberation. So the liberation that you are mentioning, is that impersonal liberation?
Yes. Even for a Vaishnav, now this is a little mysterious in one sense, but a Vaishnav doesn't covet. This is on Lord Chaitanya's platform. You can do with me what you like. But even if offered, there are statements in scripture, Vaishnava scripture, Bhakti scripture. Even if offered the other four kinds of liberation, the devotee will decline. That's a very advanced stage. In our stage, if offered, it's yes. Residing in the same planet, especially that one. Salokya Mukti, sure. Desiring to go back to Godhead is good for one who's in a neophyte position, one who's very advanced. It's not that, the answer is no, I won't go there. The answer is, that's not the desire. It's not the fulfillment of a desire that this will happen. Rather, whatever you like is what I desire. Please give me your devotional service. Yes. You have something? No. Yes? Maybe. Back there. No. Yes. Maybe. Go ahead.
Guru Maharaj, like you read from Bhagavatam, that one aspect of Grihastha Ashram we heard today is that it is not conducive to spiritual life.
Attachment is not conducive to spiritual life.
And then, so there is one position when we say that, okay, detached Grihastha can still go back to spiritual world. And then I also recall hearing, I don't remember the details, but that the Grihastha Ashram is like a fortress. So how is, can you please explain, how is it like to me it seems like it means that it is actually conducive to spiritual life.
You have to do it properly, like anything. Like a herd of turtles. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains a great exponent. He explains very nicely how grihasthas should do their duties from the realized position of a grihastha doing his duty. So the fortress aspect is where the onslaught of attraction for sense objects is protected against by being properly situated in grihastha ashram. And in a prescribed, regulated, religious manner, one associates with money and the opposite sex, husband or wife, in a regulated, prescribed, religious manner, and not otherwise. So that's the fortress. And one diligently does one's duties, he describes, without attachment to the duties or the outcome of the duties or being the enjoyer of the situation. That's unique, but that's the job description. And the risk, the dark well, is becoming attached. And when one becomes attached, one's mind becomes bewildered. Discrimination is lost. You fall in the material pool by contemplating in a mood of enjoyment. So one may think, well, better that the object is far away. There'll be less tendency to contemplate the object. Not necessarily so. Take the object far away, one may contemplate the object and be in proximity of the object, money and the opposite sex, and what goes along with money, you know, comfortable life, so-called, in a regulated, prescribed religious manner, one may be more peaceful and less, you know, and more protected by that fortress, that being situated in Dharma. So really it comes down to which is most suited to one's nature, this one or that one. Because whether this one or that one, there's religious duties, religious principles that can protect one, going outside of which one is vulnerable. So even for a grihastha, if one becomes situated or is situated in the grihastha ashram, one should understand there is risk. One should not be cavalier or casual. This is a serious situation that I'm taking up. It's an instrument that needs to be used properly. If I don't use it properly, if I'm inattentive and negligent, it can bring havoc. But use it properly. It's a good instrument. That's the fortress. So grihasthas should be very concerned to understand how to situate oneself or utilize properly this instrument, this religious position of grihastha ashram. main, one of the main operative principles is not seeing oneself as the enjoyer of the facility, of this association, but the servant of Krishna in this association. My senses are meant to be used in the service of the master of the senses, not this is an object for my enjoyment. Service of, to the master of the senses. And being in a conditioned soul's position, that's not 100% until I'm a liberated soul, until I'm like the four Kumaras. So there's tendency, and that tendency needs to be regulated and monitored and checked by, held in abeyance by religious principle, utilized under the codes of religious principle and not otherwise. That's the protection. More?
Not related to this, but about Ekadashi.
Okay.
At certain stage in life, or some, like a couple of years or 3-4 years back, there was some enthusiasm. I had more enthusiasm for fasting on Ekadashi, and like I could do Nirjal also. But recently I'm not finding that easy, so it's like I feel like I need to eat something, even Ekadashi Prasadam. So that capacity kind of going down, and the enthusiasm, rather the main thing is the enthusiasm is not that much. So how can I go back to be more enthusiastic?
Cultivate. Pendulum swings this way, the pendulum swings that way. Move the pendulum this way. Don't try to do it in the extreme, do it in steps. And association. I would guess that that period of time when you're observing the codicil with enthusiasm, there was some component of association somewhere where others were thinking in a similar way, and that was like firing you up. So, to help move the pendulum the other way, find someone who's thinking similarly or doing similarly, and, you know, through association, that will help move the pendulum the other way. I remember during the VIAG days when a number of us were teaching, Dhamal Krishnamaraj was there in his little house and near the Krishna Balaram temple, and every Ekadasi was this like ecstatic event, because Dhamal Krishnamaraj would invite a number of devotees and we'd stay up all night long and have kirtan, discuss topics, and the night just went you know, it wasn't just Nirjal, it was awake all night long. And it wasn't the next day was a wipeout. The next day was, you know, a little nap and off you go, because we were like very spiritually energized. It was being done for the spiritual purpose, not just like show or something. Get 5 stars instead of 4. It wasn't a material thing. It was a very spiritual event. Made it easy through association. So look for some association that is thinking along that line. What does it mean being detached? Well, in Bhagavad Gita in the 5th chapter, Krishna explains being detached means being attached to Krishna. Vasudeva Prayana. The other kind of detached is the flip side of attachment. It's not complete, to say the least. It's not what real detachment is. Real detachment is not, I don't care. Real detachment is, I see as Krishna sees. I see through scripture. I see it as manifestation of Krishna's energy. And because it's a manifestation of Krishna's energy, it's not like an opportunity for me to enjoy or something that repulses me. It's a manifestation of Krishna's energy. It's knowledge brings detachment in the proper sense, not the I don't care sense. You see things as they are. That's detachment. Attachment is you see things according to how it pleases or displeases me. That's attachment. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.